Corporate bosses across America have been sputtering in outrage at you working stiffs this summer, spewing expletives about the fact that while the U.S. economy has been coming back, you haven't. Labor shortage, they squeal, lazily accusing the workforce of mass laziness. They charge insultingly that millions of workers got used to laying around during the pandemic, noting that there is now an abundance of jobs open for everything from restaurant workers to nurses. The bosses and their political dogs bark that you people need to get back in the old harness and start pulling again. Adding a nasty bite to their bark, several GOP governors cut off unemployment benefits to people, hoping to force them to work. Other businesses have proffered signing bonuses, free dinner coupons, and other lures, while such notoriously mingy outfits as McDonald's and Walmart have even upped their wage scale in an effort to draw workers. Yet, no go. In fact, to the astonishment of the economic elite, the employment flow this year is going the other way. Record numbers of current workers in all sorts of jobs in every section of the country are voluntarily walking away. There's even an official economic measurement of this phenomena called the quits rate, and it is surging beyond anything our economy has experienced in modern history. In April, 4 million workers quit. In May, another 3.6 million left. And in June, 3.9 million said adios. The quits are so unexpected and so widespread that pundits have started dubbing this year the Great Resignation. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's wrong with people? Why are such staggering numbers of Americans failing to do their jobs? But wait, maybe that's the wrong question. Maybe the corporate system's jobs are failing the people. Consider this. The most common comment by those who are walking out is, I hate my job. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is brought to you by the Lowdown Happy Hour, live streamed from the Chat and Chew Cafe. Details at HightowerLowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as I've been saying, you know, one of the things that's most concerning to me is that we're seeing all of this organizing going on in the realm of, we're going to go after those school boards. We're going to get those school board members. We know where you live. We're going to get 20 of my buddies, and we're going to physically remove you, and we'll put in the people that we want. And as I said, this is what they wanted to do on January 6th. This is the mindset. They went there to stop the certification of election on January 6th. Now they want to go into school boards to physically stop them from doing something as egregious as keeping their children safe. It's crazy, but it is where we are. And here to share some thoughts on, well, just some of the insanity that's going on, I've asked J.J. Abbott to come talk with us. J.J. is the executive director of Commonwealth Communications, their website, vote.pa. J.J., thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Glad to be here.
So I'm looking at this guy from Northampton County running for executive, county executive. He's men got to be men again, JJ, getting too soft. We're going to get 20 of his men, and they're going to walk in, and they're going to throw those bums out, and they're going to install people, and they're going to make their decision. And that's how it's going to be, JJ.
That is America, I guess, now.
It's what the way they want it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what is most important about this whole thing is that, you know, the reason why people are getting mad and screaming and hollering at meetings is because they're making up for something else. And that's a lack of majority support. I mean, when, you know, for all the rumblings about the pushback around COVID, you know, there's really only one poll that seems to actually matter. And that's how many people that could got vaccinated. And in that poll in Pennsylvania, that poll is like 65% of adults that are fully vaccinated and 80% of people that have at least one shot. So I think the reason why these people are going and yelling, other than there's a bunch of right-wing, very wealthy people that are helping finance them, besides that reason, it's really because they're I think they have to make this scene in order to seem bigger than they really are. And I think, you know, it's what we're seeing is that school boards are not buying it. You know, in Pennsylvania, yes, there are 500 school districts, but something like 200 of them now have some sort of mask requirement in place. And that represents well over half of the municipal or half of the student population in Pennsylvania. So I think this is a big loser in the eyes of parents and students and other people in the community who are like, I don't want decisions about schools or child safety being made by the loudest people in the room. Like, we are the majority. We're the people that got vaccinated. We wore masks. We wear them when the risk is high. Like, we are the majority. So I think the reality is, like, these people are going to make a big scene, but we need to out organize them. And because we have a much more receptive audience, which is like all the people who got vaccinated that just want to move on. We want to like get back to fixing the other problems other than the pandemic that we had long before this virus ever appeared.
No, I agree with you, but for me, this is just another meal in the rage machine's buffet. This is just another part of that rage machine. This
Absolutely. Is about, and they this keep is, going in between masks and vaccines and critical race theory and all of these things that are not any of the top 10, 25, 100, 1,000 problems. Because we have a lot of real problems in America and in Pennsylvania, even more specifically. But it's always a distraction. Whenever the country's trying to come together and actually get things done, like we're like they're trying to do right now in Washington, you know, they just throw everything at the wall to try to divide the country so that they can keep the status quo. And what does that status quo do? It keeps working people down with low wages and crappy benefits, while the billionaires continue to get richer and richer through pandemic and economic catastrophe. You know, this is all about dividing the country around issues that don't actually matter in order to prevent the kind of change that we came out and a vast, vast majority of Americans voted for in 2020, whatever they believe about that.
No, but, you know, again, where I'm going with this is, and you've hit on all of the main points, this is just one more step in that rage machine that they have built through talk radio, through the algorithms of social media, through cable news. It's all getting these people all wadded up, all angry and all fired up to fight battle, so that they're willing to take up arms. I literally know people who are they want civil war. In fact, there's a guy calling for civil war over the mask mandate. How dare the school board do this? We're going to come to your house and it's going to be a civil war. Because this JJ, whether you agree with me or not, this is what a segment of our population wants desperately. They want to go and have armed conflict in the street because they fashion themselves as some kind of uber patriots who are fighting for some democracy or some freedom that we've never had and will never have.
Yeah, and I agree. There is this faction that, you know, that wants to sort of hold us back, and subsets of that faction are even going to those extremes. But I think, you know, when you look at the issue sets that majorities of Americans or Pennsylvanians, and sort of how I look at it, actually want to see happen. I mean, there is a majority of people who I think completely reject that. And the reality is, though, is that this is what the voter suppression is about, right? It is about trying to make it even harder for certain segments of people to vote in order so that they can protect this sort of minority rule that we see at all levels of government. And so, you know, I think it's just another reminder how important it is that we are we're organizing against them. We're building infrastructure to fight back, and that we're mobilizing people through action to get out and vote, but also to get active in things like the school boards. Because I think going back to the school boards, the one good thing that we've seen over the last few weeks is that people are starting to fight back. You see doctors and nurses in their communities organizing to fight back against this rhetoric around masks and vaccines that's complete nonsense. You see moms and dads and all sorts of teachers and former teachers coming to meetings that they've never gone to before and saying, like, this is not who we are. This is not what we want. We want you to do the thing that makes sense, which is to keep kids in school by keeping them safe. And so, you know, I think what we have to look at is that, you know, yes, there are these loud people. Yes, there are these extremists that are trying to divide us, but there's a lot of people who are coming together to fight back. And I think that's really the most important thing that we've seen over the last few weeks. While we've heard all of this nonsense and seen some really ugly and divisive things, at the end of the day, you know, that's what we need more of, is people coming together to try to actually get things done for our communities that will help our neighbors.
I agree with you. Another entree on the rage buffet is, and you brought it up a second ago, about voting. You know, they
in
still
Pennsylvania,
have...
Rick, in Pennsylvania, I corrected, we call that the smorgasbord. We don't.
Okay, the rage smorgasbord. The reason I don't say it is I have a hard time saying smorgasbord. But one of the things coming up now is we evidently can't let go of the 2020 election. There are some, Senator Doug Mastriano and his faction who can't get past the fact that the former guy lost. I guess are we moving towards kind of an Arizona kind of thing? Is that happening? I mean, I've been seeing stories about this. Chris Dush, Jake Corman evidently said some things that have us in a weird spot. Where are we going here with there's maybe another recount coming? What?
Yeah. So, I mean, one like scam after another scam after another scam, which, you know, is just kind of indicative of how these people operate, always trying to distract us from the sort of things that they're actually supposed to be doing. But I think, so what we've seen over the last few weeks is there have been this sort of like big public show where they went from the audit by Mastriano to an audit by essentially the same person not named Doug Mastriano. And that was supposed to represent some sort of shift into a better direction. But at the end of the day, what this really is that there is an ultimate goal, and that's to continue the big lie, to convert it into something that seems more legitimate than the insurrection or the stop the steal nonsense that we saw right after the election. And this is all part of the bigger game that we're seeing across the country. You know, it's the same as the legislation, as these recounts, as, you know, these investigations and hearings that they're doing and conveniently in all the swing states that they have any semblance of power. This audit, quote unquote, election review scam that they've cooked up is just a bit all part of that. And what the ultimate goal is to undermine the 2020 election, undermine vote by mail, which was such an important component of making sure people had access to the polls, undermine and make it harder, you know, pick out certain things and try to create controversy about them. And then create justification for scaling back vote by mail or getting rid of drop boxes or making it harder for people's votes to count or be cast. So I think what we're seeing now is that they know the ultimate goal, which is they want to undermine, they want to create all of this chaos in the press. And then they're just working backwards from there. So they got a new guy in charge and has apparently no plan yet, but he's going to work backwards from that, and whatever it takes to use all the levers of government that they have to make that argument. That's what they're going to try to do. And we'll have to see if it becomes as big of a circus as Arizona. But no doubt it's going to be of a similar flavor.
No, it's crazy. I mean, I never agreed with the Pennsylvania Republican Party. I never did. But I never thought there were as many crazy people in that party as now. Look, I never thought Jake Corman was crazy. I'm now looking at this going, I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone really had this sort of on the menu, you know, sort of, get Mastriano all mad by kicking him off the audit, but then still try to do the exact same thing with a very similar person. I think it was very unexpected to people, and unfortunately, you know, I think while all of this is in service of trying to please Trump and the people who follow him in their districts, you know, what the real cost is all of the things that they're not doing for Pennsylvania, which is a pretty hefty list at this point. And, you know, we've been had this Republican legislature for essentially the last 30 years. And so, you know, it's just an, you know, just like we talked about before, it's just another distraction from right. sort of what people, the majority of people in Pennsylvania actually want them to be doing, which is certainly not this.
But the difference is they were never going to do the things we needed them to do. So at least
well, absolutely. Yeah. But we've seen it before with abortion bills and gun bills and other things where, you know, it just creates this distraction and it fills the time that they're in session, but it doesn't actually get anything done. And it sort of feeds the beast in terms of their politics at home, and then you know that's sort of the all that gets done. So I think you know hopefully that you know this just doesn't completely consume all of the attention, but that's probably their intention.
But isn't that the point though, JJ? I mean, you're yes. someone who's been around Pennsylvania politics a long time. That is the point. The point is to feed the base the red meat that's going to get them out in the midterm election, because the calculus is the only way they're going to be able to beat the Democrats in the midterm, and especially if we get a good size infrastructure bill, is to demonize, is to tear down, is to blame, is to do the things that they're doing, feeding the angry crowd the red meat that they need to show up and cause chaos.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think what we're seeing is that there's also energy against exactly what they're trying to do. And that's why, you know, in Pennsylvania, we've seen this real growth of progressive organizing across the state. That's so important, you know, in Western Pennsylvania with organizations like Pennsylvania United and One Pennsylvania. And we're seeing in Philadelphia and in the suburbs, you know, progressive organizing by, you know, organizations like For Our Future and a lot of labor unions that are really active across the state and new organizations like the New Pennsylvania Project and Make the Road that these are actually organizing people to in a different direction, which I think is really important, is that we need to be organizing all the time. You can see exactly that's what the right is doing. They're trying to pick these issues. They're trying to get people to sign up for their email lists and get ginned up to give them donations around them. But we need to fight back against that by, you know, being not just opposition to them, but also, you know, to your point, getting things done that deliver for the people that came out and voted for Democrats and progressives in 2020. Right now, the most important thing that anyone can be doing is organizing towards getting those things done, delivering on things like infrastructure and jobs and care and climate and voting rights. And immigration, and making sure that we are delivering for the people who delivered, you know, power to the Democrats in Washington. And so, you know, I'm really, you know, I think we've seen good signs of movement in that direction, particularly around the reconciliation bill. So we got to get those things done because we need to unite the country around something that we're delivering and that they can fight to protect, or else, you know, Republicans are going to win the day with these, you know, crazy distractions and divisions.
And ultimately, we got to make sure everyone has access to the ballot box.
Absolutely.
Because
so if you go to vote.pa and you live in Pennsylvania, you can figure out how to register to vote, how to vote by mail. And once you get your ballot, you can find a drop box there. So, you know, yeah, that absolutely, Rick, we need everybody to get out and vote, because right now we're seeing, you know, the guy you started, kicked off the show, who called for the insurrection at the school board meetings, that guy is running to be the Northampton County executive, one of the largest counties in Pennsylvania. And so these are the local elections this year are going to be absolutely essential to make sure we're electing people who are putting our actual communities first.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I don't know why that guy hasn't already been arrested. That is a terroristic threat in my view. Because there was no veiled anything. We're going in there. We're going to throw you out. Much like the guy out in California where we're coming to your house and we're going to start a civil war. We got some interesting days ahead. But, JJ, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing some of your expertise. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rick. Appreciate you having me.
Good stuff, JJ Abram. Abbott. executive director there of the Commonwealth Communications. Vote.pa is the website. I'm going to get it right, I tell you. Vote.pa, JJ Adams. I got to break right here, right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1907. That was the day labor leader Luisa Moreno was born in Guatemala City. As a young woman, she fought for the admission of women into Guatemalan universities. After attending journalism school in Mexico City, Luisa moved to New York with her husband and worked as a seamstress. Outraged by low pay, racial discrimination, and poor working conditions, she led organizing efforts on the job. During the Great Depression, she worked as a full-time union organizer, first with the AFL, organizing Black and Latina cigar rollers in Florida. But she also became active with the Communist Party and joined CIO efforts to organize cannery workers. Luisa led unionizing efforts of pecan shelling women workers in San Antonio, Texas, and then of cannery workers in Los Angeles. In 1938, Luisa helped organize the Spanish-speaking People's Congress. During World War II, she fought against discrimination in hiring of Mexicans in oil and war-related industries. In the 1940s, she became centrally involved in high-profile legal defense cases of Mexican-American youth prosecuted on frame-up charges. These included work around the 1942 Sleepy Lagoon case and then of victims of the Zoot Suit riots a year later. She continued union work in California, helping to organize and represent walnut pickers. By 1950, she was caught in the crosshairs of the McCarthy-era witch hunts. Luisa was targeted by Operation Wetback and offered citizenship status in return for testimony against radical labor leader Harry Bridges. When she refused, she faced deportation on the accusation that she had once been a member of the Communist Party. She returned to Guatemala and continued organizing workers throughout Central America. Luisa Moreno died in Guatemala in 1992.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, one of the things that I truly believe is all of this outrage, all of this this push to get these radical voices front and center is really just about just causing that kind of chaos, that kind of uncertainty, that kind of anger that fuels the conservative base. Not so much on the left, not so much on the liberals, a little more cerebral, a little bit more in the gray area, as opposed to thinking about things. On the extreme right, it's black and white. The foreigner against it. Do they good or bad? Either I get to see my beautiful children's face or I don't. And I'll die on the hill that says my kids have to wear a mask, which is weird. Which is weird. And it's all part of this, you know, like I said, this rage buffet. I mean, it is just another, little side dish of so many. Because it's all they have. There's nothing else. If you look at what the GOP has to run on in 2022, all they've got is rage. There's no agenda. There's no policy initiatives. They've got no ideas. You know, JJ said, they're not doing any other work. They weren't doing any work to begin with. There's nothing there. There's not. There's no policy chops whatsoever. Nothing. They're going to do nothing for working people. And we already know that. But they want to try and destroy the one guy who does. Because fear and smear is all they have. I've said it a million times. Biden was not my number one choice. But he's moving in the right direction. These infrastructure bills, The $1.2 trillion one, the hard infrastructure bill, we need that. I wish it was more, wish it was bigger, wish it was much chunkier, much more visionary, much more transformational. In the $3.5 trillion bill, I'm still not sure that's enough. To undo 40 years of assaults on a social safety net, to try now to pick up where the past couple of generations have pocketed the wealth of this country in ways that we're never getting back. What the right understands masterfully is that their minions are loyal. Their people are going to march in lockstep. They're going to do what they're told. They're going to get angry when they're supposed to. They're going to flip the switch on. Like a Pavlovian dog, they'll start to drool. And all they have to do is point them in the direction. And Trump did this on January 6th. He knew what he was doing. He knew he was riling them up, and he knew exactly where he was pointing them. And he knew exactly what he wanted to happen. Because they were clear, we're going to stop this. We're going to stop the certification of the election. And these people are saying the exact same rhetoric around school boards, having the audacity to say, no, your kids are going to have to wear a mask. Or you can teach them at home. It's not like you're going to come and we're going to duct tape their mouths shut and put bubbles over their head. Nobody's saying that. You got a choice. This is what conservatives used to believe. They used to believe in choice. We're giving them choice. You have the ability. Keep your kid at home. Find another school. Or wear the damn mask. That's what conservatives claimed they believed in. But this isn't even about the mask. It's about the outrage. It's about the anger. It's about feeding that fire. It's about feeding that rage. It's about the grievance. Because Republicans are masterful. Masterful at distraction. Hey, shiny thing, squirrel, butterfly, whatever. They're great at it. In fact, I was watching a Fox News segment with Maria Bartiromo. And she asked Kevin McCarthy, point blank, quote, will you lead drawing up articles of impeachment? Will you look into the 25th Amendment? Rick Scott tweeted out, it's time to look at the 25th Amendment now that we see all these missteps from Joe Biden. I'm not quite sure which missteps, all these missteps. There were a couple of things in Afghanistan that maybe I would have done differently, that maybe the generals wish they had done differently, that maybe our intelligence was a little better. But ultimately, I think Biden did the best he could do with what he had. A deadline to get out. And we got out. Almost 150,000 people and no casualties of the flights coming out. No, we had a terror attack. That was something that was unfortunate and predictable. And yet they chose to take that and make that political. But this is what they're going to use in 2022. We already see them laying the groundwork. Because Maria Bartiromo, I believe, is smart enough to know that Kevin McCarthy can write up all the articles of impeachment he wants. They're going nowhere. Because Republicans aren't in the majority. And I hope she's smart enough to realize that a member of the House isn't going to be able to invoke the 25th Amendment. That comes from the cabinet. I hope she'd... But it's about laying that ground, planting that seed in the angry person's mind that, yeah, we got to impeach him. So they're laying the groundwork so they can run on it in 2022. And hey, if they do win in 2022, their hopes and dreams and game plan of impeaching Biden and Harris, because Harris made the egregious error of going to the John McCain Memorial in Hanoi, the egregious error of doing that. So she's got to go too, so they can elect the former guy as Speaker of the House and install him as president, because that's what they do. The thugs want to come and overturn the apple cart and install what they want. Elections be damned. Vote counting be damned. And if it isn't what they want, they're going to rig it and fix it and do whatever they can to get it where they want. All while pointing their fingers at everyone else, saying everyone else is cheating. Because it's who they are. They're the spoiled kid in the cereal aisle who didn't get what he wanted. And they're throwing a fit about it. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend Bob Nay is going to be here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Right back.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
For many, the 8-hour day is the standard, but it wasn't always this way. The original American workday was from sunup to sundown, following the demands of an agricultural workday. Over time, the nation became more industrialized and workers moved from individually owned, self-sufficient farms to factories, taking workers from their homes and families. Factory owners demanded the agricultural sunup to sundown workday, forcing workers to toil long hours in grueling conditions. Workers began to collectively organize in pursuit of more time for family, education, and recreation. The cry of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will grew louder. For a century, the 8-hour day was viewed as the holy grail of the labor movement, and for this hallowed vision, workers sacrificed, often with their blood and their lives. The first strike for shorter hours occurred in May of 1791 in the city of Philadelphia, where carpenters protested a day's wages, paying the same in January as was paid for a longer day in July. Chicago in 1886 was home to one of the largest showings of solidarity. Some 80,000 workers turned out to support the 8-hour cause. It was in Chicago's Haymarket Square that a terrorist bomb and the blazing guns of company paid police cost policemen and numerous workers their lives and their blood. As a result of the Haymarket tragedy, 8 innocent men were tried and convicted for a crime they did not commit. 4 of the men were hung. The Haymarket Square tragedy was but one of many battles in which working men, women, and children shed blood, tears, and flesh in the pursuit of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.thericksmithshow.com.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1921. That was the day that one of the most pitched battles in U.S. labor history, the Battle of Blair Mountain, began in West Virginia. Coal fueled the engines of industry, keeping the trains moving and the steel mills humming. Labor organizing in the coal fields faced violent repression. The conflict turned bloody at Mattawan. Friend of labor, local lawman Sid Hatfield, had won a gun battle against armed members of the notorious Baldwin Felts Detective Agency. Then, other Baldwin Felts agents, brought to West Virginia by the mine owners, gunned down Hatfield in cold blood. The miners' anger boiled over. 600 miners gathered under the United Mine Workers of America District 17 banner. The armed miners were determined to march into the state's southern coal fields. Their aim was to promote the union effort and sweep away the gunmen hired by the mining companies. As they marched, more and more miners joined them. As many as 10,000 miners converged on Blair Mountain. The high ground stood between the unionized northern part of the state and the less organized southern mines. At Blair Mountain, they met Logan County Sheriff Don Chafin, who had amassed an army of 3,000 armed men to repel the miners. Chafin's men had dug trenches, blocked roads, and marshaled machine guns to stop the Union men. In the battle that ensued, 1 million rounds were fired. The mine owners hired private planes to drop shrapnel bombs on the miners. The United States Army finally arrived. The miners, many of them World War I veterans, surrendered. Although the owners had won, what occurred at Blair Mountain drew national attention to the unsafe working conditions and the brutality of the coal barons in the coal fields. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Interesting story out in Butler County, Ohio. Evidently, a judge, Gregory Howard of the Butler County Common Pleas Court, ruled that the hospital, Westchester Hospital, part of the University of Cincinnati network, that they would indeed have to give Jeffrey Smith, a patient, this ivermectin. Evidently, the wife, he's been on the ventilator. He's been there for, I guess, a month and a half now, it looks like. She filed a court order, says, hey, I want him treated with this. We found a doctor to prescribe it. The hospital said no. So she had to sue to get them to be able to, the hospital to give him the drug made for deworming livestock. Of which, look, I believe the hospital said no and made them sue solely to cover their behind. So if something negative happens, but the judge is going to go give it to him. And I got to tell you, I don't know the judge is wrong. If you're on your last leg, maybe try, jumper cables, maybe try Clorox. Who knows what might work? Couldn't do any worse harm. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day and maybe a little bit about the hospital there in Ohio, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So what do you think? Is this an overreach by the courts to say, no, you, the hospital, have to give this guy the drug? Any thoughts?
Well, this is Butler County, which is the home county of John Boehner, by the way, former Speaker of the House,
okay.
Just to give a little perspective down there. And this one's got me a little baffled because the judges, he had a two-page order. He doesn't explain his reasoning, behind his decision, which he's a judge, so he doesn't have to, but he doesn't explain it. And then they asked one of the university health spokespeople to comment, and he said, I can't because litigation and HIPAA says I can't, because we were kind of wondering on their end what it was, But this man Smith's been fighting the virus, for weeks, and so they use the request for emergency order. And what they say, the wife, Rick, said that she began researching COVID treatment options, and she came across several articles where COVID-19 patients were given the ivermectin. And after the treatment, she said all the patients left the hospital and they're home. So the attitude is, absolutely nothing to lose, no little risk, and they're going to go ahead and do it. So
that's kind of where my mindset is. Look, I mean, if he's
see what happens,
Yeah, look, maybe he's got worms that we didn't know about it.
You just don't know.
I wish him the best.
She researched it, and that's where this came from.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she read the same pages on Facebook that I've seen of all the crackpots saying, no, it's the greatest thing in the world.
Now, Dr. Fauci did say that people shouldn't take it because there's no evidence it works. So, again, I don't know. We'll see. And now the FDA, by the way, tweeted, you are not a horse. You're not a cow. Seriously, y'all, stop it.
Yeah.
And that's what
the
they
FDA. Yeah, that's great.
That's what they actually tweeted.
And look, I mean, that's the reality. But here's the weird thing, and this is where I'm struggling with where we are in this moment. You're gonna go to Tractor Supply, and you're gonna grab something off the shelf that's made for horses, but you're not gonna get the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right, exactly.
I mean, you don't know what's in that. You don't know what doses to take. You're gonna hyperdose on zinc and this ivermectin. You're going to, I've given up. I've almost given up on trying to figure them out. Also, interesting story from Cook County. I'm assuming this is Illinois, where a judge had asked a wife in a custody dispute if she has been vaccinated. She said no, and he gave custody to the husband.
Interesting.
I'm not sure how you can do that, but it is what it is.
That is very interesting. Huh.
It was actually New York. That I believe it as I just scrolled through it. But I didn't know there was a Cook County in New York. I'm going to have to go back to that. But I was reading through the story. I'm like going, I don't know. Is that something that you can give custody to one party over the other? And I guess it is what it is.
I mean, if you're in a courtroom and you've got a judge, there are certain things, I guess, that the Bar Association could call them up for, but probably won't in this case. They would probably reaffirm, you know, the judge has the right to. Plus, in this case, the judge would say, well, you know, due to the medical issue, which one of the parents is the, you know, more, let's say, solid parents when it comes to the medical side, and I guess you'd have to go with the vaccinated one.
Yeah, we definitely are in interesting times.
Aren't we?
There is no question about that whatsoever. It's we are certainly in some very, very strange and interesting times. Let's move on. The last flight out of Afghanistan happened at 3:29 this afternoon. That's it. We're out of there finally. Thoughts?
Yes, we are. And you know, when you read this article about the last flight, it's very interesting because it, you know, quotes since July the departure of 122,000 some people. And you know, and you read that, and then they, you know, they were very careful on this, which is interesting. And when I saw the president say this, I thought, okay, somebody was smart to put that into the speech. And that's a while back when he said, we're going to evacuate any American that wants to leave.
Yep.
And he put that in there. And I had a couple of friends say, well, what do you mean, want to leave? Well, I was in Iran in 1978, as you know. The revolution of the Shah started. There were 40,000 Americans when I went over there. I think by the time I left, probably half were gone. And I left, and then eventually, you know, the rest is history. The Shah was overthrown, and we had, you know, our hostages taken. And Americans still remain, some of them. Some of them are still there to this day. And so I know people do remain for reasons. There was one woman in Afghanistan, an American. I guess she was running a kennel and said, I'm not going to leave the dogs alone. And then, of course, there are people that are married and into families, you know, and they may choose to stay. So so any American that wanted to get out was. There were no Americans per se on the last flight because they've already been out. And in the last 17 days, they have evacuated the largest airlift in U.S. history, and they've evacuated, again, over 120,000 U.S. citizens. Citizens of the allies, and of course Afghan allies of the United States. So I think that's quite amazing if you look at the numbers.
No, I think so too. But you know, all I keep hearing from the right wing is how the egregious errors. You've got Maria Bartiromo asking Kevin McCarthy when they're going to start impeachment hearings and when they're going to invoke the 25th Amendment and all this stuff because it was the worst thing ever. Egregious errors.
You know, there were some comments made, and they had an article today about not a lot, but some Democrats, of course, they're going to focus on anything, you know, that's said there. And then early on, of course, the Senate, some of the Democrats in the Senate had said they were going to do an investigation. And I'm just sitting here today wondering, you know, after all of this, after everything, you know, is done, what are they going to start doing now? Is the Senate really going to undertake an investigation? I mean, there are a couple of issues. The main issue is I think, the Bagram Air Force Base. And, of course, today the military and the White House were in a little bit different direction. You know, the White House is saying this was the advice of the military. This is what they gave. And presidents can take the advice or not. But, again, they were given advice to close Bagram in July. And so, yes, there are some issues where they'll ask, you know, people will say, well, should we have or shouldn't we have? But when you look at the fact, if they're going to have an investigation, what do you actually investigate? Are you going to investigate the 20-year war, or are you going to, you know, investigate the closure of a base? I don't know what they're going to do with it.
Now, I would like to investigate the beginning. I'd like to investigate, you know, how we got there, why we were there so long, who made money off of it. I'd like to investigate all that stuff.
Why we undertook a civil mission. We had a military and a civil. When I was in Afghanistan, Rick, they briefed us on it. I was with Sheila Jackson Lee and Paul Kanjorski and Dave Hobson at the time. He was, two R's and two D's. And we were there, and they said, oh, we have a military and a civil mission, which was fine originally if they were going to have the two missions. But I guess the question is, how did it then go to this period of time to 20 years?
Yeah, no, I mean, one of the things I used to say
back... Why was that decision made?
Back when I first started this show, one of the things I would always say about being over there is you can't have a civil mission. Militaries aren't made for civil missions. Militaries are made to break things and kill people. That's their job. Their job isn't to be peacemakers. Their job isn't to rebuild culture. Their job isn't to end, you know, thousands of years of conflict with group therapy. Their job is to go out and blow things up and kill people.
Right, and those are things that, you know, again, were stated. I was there, and it was February of 2002. This wasn't later on, you know, 5 or 10 years later, they were saying we're going to have a civil mission. And it was, quote, unique at the time, they were saying. And then as time went on, we did the same thing in Iraq. And I can remember a group protesting about it. I'm talking about in the meetings. And I know at one time I had made a statement about what are we doing, you know, we're building basketball courts, and I got slammed down pretty hard. I can remember exactly who did it. It was Tom DeLay of Texas. I can remember. And basically in front of the caucus, actually threatening my chairmanship, you know, about it. So, you know, nobody particularly stopped it, and it went on and on and on, and it came to an end, and now it's done. So, like I said, I don't know what the aftermath is going to be. I don't know how they're going to, you know, investigate. Yes, we lost some soldiers, and that happens in these situations, unfortunately, obviously. But as far as, you know, doing the best job that they could do, the soldiers did a great job at the airport. They really did.
No, I you can't.
Condition.
No. And look, all along the way, they've done what they were asked to do, even
right.
if it was, you know, all over the place and honorably.
Right.
There's nothing to point blame there.
Right.
And if we have to blame, we start from the beginning and work our way through the whole thing.
Good. Exactly.
It's that simple to me. But as I've said, it's good we're out of there. I'm not overly worried about terrorism coming out of Afghanistan right now. I'm more worried about domestic terrorism and the January 6th kind of things happening daily in this country at school board meetings. As I don't know if you've been following some of these
yes.
school board meetings with some of the insanity coming out of them.
Right.
I'm worried about another January 6th, but these happening almost daily or weekly.
Yeah, there's such a debate that's gone on. Especially at these school board meetings, and I'm just looking at it, and then, of course, the vaccine debate. 51% of people in Ohio are vaccinated. You know, that's it, 51%.
It's frightening.
And Sunday I was in the middle of a debate with people I know that I didn't want to hear it anymore because I've had the vaccination. And I was talking about getting the third booster, and by the end of the conversation I'm like, okay, look, I'm going to get it, and if you don't want it, I don't know what to tell you. But if you have to face a ventilator, it's not going to be pleasant. The reaction to the shot would be much better for you, period.
Or you can go to the tractor supply and show a picture of a horse so you can buy some ivermectin.
And get your spouse to go to court for you.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the route we have to go. I mean, it's really just crazy. And finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on Hurricane Ida. New Orleans just got slammed again. But Surprisingly, they've just lost power for a while. I was expecting, a possible breach. Looks like they're gonna sneak through this one.
Well, I think they are, and it's not, it's not a Hurricane Katrina, but it was bad. They've got an immense recovery underway, and the hurricane devastated the southeast Louisiana coast, and it's obviously going to leave a lot of devastation and a wide path of some destruction, but it does look like they have avoided, obviously, what horrible carnage we saw when it came to Katrina, which was just unbelievable.
Yeah,
so it was bad, but it could have been horrifically worse.
Yeah, I mean, but here we are. What is this? The ninth, the ninth hurricane of the season.
Yes, sure, bad.
How many hurricanes do we usually get on an average year?
I don't know. I don't know. It does seem like we've had a lot.
I think 2005, they said there was something like a total of 28 that came through, because they actually went to double A numbers and or double A names and stuff. It's going to be a long year if this one is going to be indicative of any of the future ones. But, Bob, I appreciate the time and the thoughts.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. No, I mean, look, I was watching some of the storm, and oh, my gosh. We've got friends down in New Orleans that I checked on to see how they're doing, and fortunately they got away fairly unscathed. But New Orleans is just a big fishbowl. If it fills up, there's no way of getting out. Let's take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1935. That was the day that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Revenue Tax Act, more popularly known as the Wealth Tax. The act reformed the federal income tax to raise rates on the wealthiest in the nation. Those making over $5 million a year could pay taxes up to 75%. In a speech to Congress that summer, Roosevelt had explained his thoughts on wealth and taxes. The president said, quote, "Wealth in the modern world does not come merely from individual effort. It results from a combination of individual effort and of the manifold uses to which the community puts that effort. The individual does not create the product of his industry with his own hands. He utilizes the many processes and forces of mass production to meet the demands of a national and international market. Therefore, in spite of the great importance in our national life of the efforts and ingenuity of unusual individuals, the people in the mass have inevitably helped to make large fortunes possible. Without mass cooperation, FDR said, great accumulation of wealth would be impossible save by unhealthy speculation. The president went on, as Andrew Carnegie put it, where wealth accumulates honorably, the people are always silent partners. Whether it be wealth achieved through the cooperation of the entire community or riches gained by speculation, in either case, the ownership of such wealth or riches represents a great public interest and a great ability to pay. Although FDR tried to win over the nation's wealthy by quoting industrialist Andrew Carnegie, he did not gain their support. Not surprisingly, many of the nation's wealthy lobbied for and used tax loopholes to evade paying the new tax rates. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, the last country in the world to pump leaded gasoline has stated that they are going to stop. Algeria was the last place on the planet that you could get leaded gasoline to put in your junkers. And they evidently have finally stopped putting it in their petrol stations. This is one of those weird things why I never understood why they added it to gasoline, other than it was an additive to stop engines from knocking. And that was it. And there were other things that were probably a little safer, but a little bit more expensive. And it comes down to just, well, good corporate America making decisions on the health and well-being of society. And what we now know, looking back, and what they knew then, look, they began adding lead to fuel back in 1922. And as the UN experts have called it, a catastrophe for the environment and public health. You know, by the 1970s, you know, most people were like, you know, the lead is bad. It is what caused the acid rain and, you know, the massive problems that we had. Not to mention heart disease, strokes, cancers, all the things that are evidently still with us because it's in the soil. It's still in the food crops, and we haven't used leaded gas in this country. And I remember some of it in the mid 80s. We had gotten away from it. You know, I think mid 80s is when we finally dumped that. But it was one of those things where you just go, why? You know, why would they do that? Because it was cheaper. It saved them money. It was all about, lining their pockets. And of course, like everything, pushing the external costs onto we the people and our government. Because they're not the ones out there cleaning things up. They're not the ones who are suffering from all of this. Now, we know that, you know, for years they used lead pipes, which has caused just, you know, just chaos for years. And you look at Flint, Michigan, and other places across the country where you've got lead in the water because of the pipes that they've used. And another reason why we need a massive infrastructure bill. Another reason why, and we've needed for decades. This isn't new. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, the Guardian ran this story about the fact that finally, you know, the globe will be free of leaded gasoline. And I had someone, you know, respond who said, you know, well, you know, the right's sad because they can't put it in their junker cars, and because they're always wanting to shoot you with lead. And I'm not going there, but it is a step in the right direction that we take this completely away. And the lesson here at home is we should be digging up all of those lead pipes and replacing them with new technology, with better pipes. You know, our water systems are crumbling. Our water systems are in trouble. We need to do something. Massive infrastructure. And look, I look at Katrina. You want to look at where we could do some more investing? We've got problems coming in the future. As climate change continues, these storms are going to get worse. This was a major one. And fortunately, a lot of people dodged a bullet. But again, sadly, you know, I was reading reports of, you know, folks who live there not being able to have the money to evacuate. At some point, maybe a public infrastructure for evacuations where people can actually get out of Dodge. Just kind of a thought. I'd love to hear your thoughts, though. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Big week ahead. President Biden's going to give a speech tomorrow on Afghanistan. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say there. And I'm sure the rage machine will continue, and there'll probably be another cretin screaming about masks. So big fun ahead. If you missed any of today's program, thericksmithshow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.